Hi, Frank.
Hi, Amanda. What are you doing?
Just making this promo for our podcast.
You mean the Novice and Frank present a comic book podcast?
Exactly.
Wait, what's it about?
So glad you asked. It's where a comic book novice and a comic book expert discuss comics and media with special guests.
A novice and an expert? Which one am I?
You're the expert, Frank.
I knew that.
Sure. Check out new episodes every Wednesday on the Nerdist School Network and subscribe on Podbean and iTunes.
And tell us what we should read next at thenoviceandfrank@gmail.com.
See? You are an expert.
The Nerdist School Network. For class and show information, visit nerdistschool.com.
Hey, foodie callers. Thank you so much for tuning in with us every week. If you haven't already, please hit that subscribe button on iTunes and leave us a rating and review. Fun fact, leaving a review makes a huge difference with iTunes and helps us bring you more foodie call every freaking week. Did you know we're also on social media? You can follow us for live foodie updates on Instagram and Twitter at Foodie Call Pod. And for recipes and confusing posts from my great aunt Virginia, like our Facebook page, facebook.com/foodiecallpodcast. Got a suggestion for a guest or want some meat sale advice from Omar? Shoot us an email, foodiecallpodcast@gmail.com. Did you get all that? For our social security and credit card numbers, listen to the end of this show. Thanks so much for listening. We love you way more than grocery flyers.
Foodie call, foodie call, not quite a foodie call, a foodie call. Foodie call, foodie call, not quite a foodie call, a foodie call.
Foodie call, the interview podcast that asks guests, what's your secret sauce? With your hosts, Kylie Hodges and Omar Nava.
Foodie call.
Oh, I thought I was going to burp. Okay, go.
Hello, hello. You are listening to Foodie Call, the interview series where each week we discuss one delicious food dish with a hilarious guest and find out what their secrets are in the kitchen. This week, we're chatting about spaghetti.
Yum, 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 yum.
I'm your host, Kylie Hodges, host, producer, and secret binger of Trader Joe's veggie chips. And sitting very close to me is Omar Nava, comedian, writer, and my boyfriend. I need to think of a new one for you.
A new credit?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think the people know you're my boyfriend.
How about the detective in charge of figuring out who's eating all these veggie chips?
More on that in a minute. Together, through our disgustingly adorable love for each other, we found we also love to cook and eat together and want to discuss with the world what it is that makes food so great. I guess this is where I tell everybody that I do love Trader Joe's veggie chips more than life itself. And I oftentimes, because I don't want to admit that I'll eat a whole bag in one sitting, I'll leave like 4 chips left in the bag and then put it in the cupboard. And then Omar opens the cupboard and finds my traces of veggie chips. And then
just a little trail of crumbs that leads back to her pillow.
So we joke that we have a mouse in the apartment that just keeps eating all of our food and leaving a little bit left. But newsflash, I'm the mouse.
She's been the mouse this whole time. That's the who's the director? M. Night Shyamalan twist. She's been the mouse all along.
Okay, before we do our sweet and sour spot of the moment, thank you all so much for listening. We love you guys. We have been so positively overwhelmed with the amount of support and excitement from all of our listeners. And I'm so proud of the amount of listens we've gotten. I set the bar very low to 2, which was just maybe my mom and then my brother. And actually, I don't even think either of them have listened yet. And you all surprised us and tuned in, and we love you all so much. If you haven't already, please subscribe on iTunes and leave us a rating and review. It makes a huge difference on iTunes, and it gives us the power to be more visible so we can get you better guests and so you can get more foodie call all the time.
Yes, please. And thanks. Gracias. Arigato.
Thanks, Omar. Just appealing to all those international downloads.
We have so many international downloads. Guten Tag.
We got listeners from Japan, Germany, Canada, and Australia. And if we could find you all when we go to those countries, we'd give you a big old kiss on the lips.
A big old lip kiss.
A beso in Spanish.
I don't know how to say it in any other language.
I feel like in German it's
probably... A kiss in Australian.
Oh man, you're so bilingual, trilingual. What is it after that?
Quadringle?
I don't know. Let's move on. Omar, what was your sweet and sour spot of the week?
My sweet spot was, okay, so for those who know us and who have heard Kylie complain, I'm, well, she doesn't know if I'm, what's the word for someone who is always injured, who thinks they're always injured?
Well, somebody who thinks they're always sick is a hypochondriac.
She thinks I'm somewhere between a hypochondriac and just like a degenerate piece of bones that fall apart very easily.
I don't think that. You're a hypochondriac.
Okay, well then, I think I'm a bag of frail, brittle, peanut brittle that's just constantly shattering. I'm constantly injured, but my sweet spot is I played softball this past weekend and had no injuries to report.
Aww.
Usually I leave with a sprained something or a strained this or a pulled that or a sore back, and I'm always icing. But this time there was no need for ice.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
It's true, though. Here's the thing. One time, like a month ago when we were in Wisconsin at my parents' house, it was summertime. It's humid there. We slept at my parents' house, and Omar, I think we had the window cracked. Omar came downstairs after waking up and said, I think I have strep throat.
Because, I hope it's not strep throat, is what I said.
No, you did not. You said, I think I have strep throat. And I said, why is that?
I'll play the tapes back.
There are no tapes. And he was like, my throat is dry. And I said,
my throat hurts.
Your throat hurt. And I said, you probably just slept with your mouth open. And I said, with a strep throat, you have like a fever and stuff. And I said, do you have a fever? And then you go, I don't know. And then just put your forehead against my face. Like I'm some sort of old-timey medicine doctor that can just tell your body temperature by it touching my cheek.
Or any human that can tell a difference in temperature.
I feel like the people who take the back of their hand and touch your forehead are liars. It's just moms who like know when their kid is lying or not. Because they're touching their kid all the time.
I'm sorry that you need technology for everything.
Also, fun fact, Omar never had to go to the doctor to get tested for strep because he didn't have strep. Have you ever had strep throat in your life?
No, that's why I didn't know.
You will know if you have strep throat. I have had strep throat many a times. That's why I had to have my tonsils removed when I was a kid. It's basically the flu with a really horrible sore throat. You would know if you had strep.
And I had a really bad sore throat.
Let's move on. What's your sour moment?
This?
Yeah, it's causing tension in the room. We're going to fight about this once we hit stop recording.
My sour spot was I was driving around the other night, and then I heard a click when I was braking, coming to a stop. So
what does that mean?
I don't know. That's the
like
sour spot.
Like a click from your car?
Yeah, from my car. Oh, like something with the brakes. It has to do with the braking. So, who knows? I might have to buy a bus pass soon, very soon.
Wait, how do you know it has to do with the brakes?
Because it only happens when I'm braking.
And your car isn't worth putting new brakes in it?
No, I mean, you gotta work on the brakes and...
Financially, your car is not worth replacing the brakes?
No, it is.
Oh.
But, well, it's like, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with it. I don't know how much it would cost, but... Yeah, I mean, you still got to, you know, keep up the maintenance and do the brakes and the oil change and all that stuff. But if it's, like, something huge, like, bigger than just, like, regular brake pads and all that, then I might just might start hoofing it and more injured in the process.
Yeah. All right. Well, if anybody's looking to get rid of a car that works well, give us a call. My sweet spot is Amazon Prime Day did me right, and I got an Instant Pot.
Instant Pot, y'all.
I feel like I'm officially marriage quality now, because when the highlight of my week is getting a kitchen appliance off of Amazon, it means I'm ready to settle down in life.
Yeah.
I got an Instant Pot, which for those of you who don't know what it is, it's basically a pressure cooker and a crock pot with like 10 other functions. You can take like pounds of meat, put it in there, and they'll be fully cooked through and like juicy and delicious in like 10 to 20 minutes. You can have dinner ready in under a half hour now with an Instant Pot. It's incredible.
Some would say instantly.
Yeah, it's amazing. So
it's Amazon.
No, no.
It's amazing.
Don't do that.
Okay. One was too many.
One was too many. I love the Instant Pot. I'm still getting to know it. We're still courting each other. So far,
still in the honeymoon phase.
Yeah, totally. But here's the thing. The reason I love the Instant Pot so much is we have an apartment without central AC. We just have a terribly ugly in-wall unit that is so loud.
Cardini Motorsport.
There's a weird, the last person who lived here put a decal for Cardini Motorsport on it. I don't know what that is, but I can't get it off. It's really ugly.
Yeah, we've been here for a while and I've never even bothered to Google what that is.
It doesn't matter. I hate it. And it's so loud that we have to turn off our AC to record this. And our poor guests, when they come over, just are drenched in sweat by the end. So... Anyways, the Instant
Bikram
Pot is great.
Bikram podcast is what I call it.
We're doing yoga while we're interviewing to really cleanse the pores. No, but the great thing about the Instant Pot is you can do the work of an oven without turning on the oven and heating up the apartment. So it's been really great for that. And stay tuned on all of our social media channels for our Instant Pot adventures. So my sour moment is... It's about The Bachelorette.
Oh,
I hope I'm not losing listeners.
Right, I'm going to go use the restroom. I'll be back in 20 minutes.
Most of you know that I also host a live Facebook after show recapping The Bachelorette every week.
Are you promoting other
things? I am. I'm cross-promoting right now. But here's the thing. I am fairly new to the Bachelorette franchise. I started watching back in Juan Pablo's season. So that was probably 2 or 3 years ago. And, you know, because I'm a newcomer, I didn't get to experience, like, the old school episodes where Chris Harrison was kind of like a therapist and he was so much more present in the show. And it was like the drama was in the rose ceremonies, which for people who don't watch, it's a bunch of people dating a guy or a girl. And at the end of every episode, the suitor gets to hand out roses to all but usually one person, and then drama ensues. And my sour moment is just that I feel like with the way reality TV is moving, The Bachelorette, the show has sort of changed, so the drama doesn't really lie in rose ceremonies anymore, and the order of the show isn't always ending with a rose ceremony. It'll end like halfway through, and it's just, I feel like it's the end of an era. I don't think they can ever go back to the way it was, and I think the show has just gotten a little too... It feels like I'm watching a really bad Girls Club. That's all.
You sound like a bachelorette hipster right now. Like, oh, I prefer their older stuff.
Everybody does.
I guess.
I love Rachel, the current bachelorette, but like the show itself just kind of sucks now. And I don't know what they can do about it. It's just
they could give out more Swiss watches, Swedish, wherever they were.
Omar watches it with me and pretends he hates it, but he's always by the end of the episode sitting on the couch asking me questions. Who's that? Why is he doing that? And we saw the episode where Rachel took Brian on a date in Geneva, Switzerland, and they like picked out watches, and then Rachel was like, "I'm gonna get you that watch," and Brian, who, if you guys watch the after show, know I do not like Brian. I think he's creepy, and I think his mom is psychotic. I had never seen him more passionately in love with Rachel than the moment she told him she was giving him an expensive watch. Which, by the way, Brian, she wasn't doing anything. ABC bought you a watch.
No, I'm not saying he a gold digger, but he wasn't getting happy. He wasn't as happy just going to Geneva.
No, you're right. You're right.
Because he was when he got a free watch.
I was very suspicious of that. All right. You ready for our next segment? It's all about you.
It's all about me. Yeah.
Every week, we receive those grocery flyers in the mail that I'm sure end up in your recycling bin or piled up with your mail for weeks at a time. Well, for Omar, this is his favorite moment of the week, digging for deals and steals. So throw away your flyers and let Omi do the work for you. Omar, what are the deals for the week?
All right. Well, last week I decided to compare my favorite in LA, Sprouts, to the grocery store that we grew up using in El Paso, Big 8. Mm-hmm. This year, I don't think I told you.
This week.
Or this week. No, this year.
Yeah.
This week, I haven't told Kylie this, but I'm going to compare Sprouts to Metro Market.
Oh, now that is a Wisconsin chain that my parents are big fans of. And I will say Metro Market is a great
It's a great store. Yeah. Like
when you can, they have a permit so that you can buy a beer. Like they have a lot of individual craft brews in a refrigerated area and you can drink it while you grocery shop.
Yeah, you've taken me like a couple times and it's a cool grocery store. Mm-hmm. Like it,
there's cheese like, tastings, there's somebody playing on a grand piano.
Yeah, they have a great like prepared food section. They have a great smelling bakery. They have a gelato area.
You can get fresh squeezed juice. I mean, yeah. The world is your oyster at Metro Market.
The world is your oyster. However, the deals are lacking.
No! Really?
Now I know why your dad goes to like 10 different grocery stores, because there's like one or two good ones, and then the rest is just like okay, at least compared to like Sprouts. But then again, how many places compared to Sprouts? Really?
Truly. Wow, I'm in shock. Do you want to go into detail about why Metro Market pales in comparison to Sprouts?
I will go into detail. So let's just, here's a quick comparison. We got cherries, huh? Cherries. You'd figure Wisconsin has a good cherry
selection.
$2.88 a pound. At Sprouts, $1.98 a pound. That's like a whole dollar difference. Yeah. Now this one I can't blame Wisconsin for, because California clearly is the epicenter of avocado everything. So Wisconsin Metro Market, 2 for $3, large Hass avocados. Sprouts, 2 for $1.
Whoa! Yeah.
Three times. Yeah, it's
but you know what? Avocados have not been cheap in California in a long time. This is a good change in prices.
They might be they've like been pricey lately.
Yeah.
Here we go. Fresh certified 80% lean ground chuck. Mm-hmm. $3.99 a pound. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good. Same prices.
But not grass fed.
But it's not grass fed. At Sprouts, you can get grass fed ground beef for $3.99 a pound.
Wow. So, Metro Market, come on.
For all the hippies out there. Let's see. Let me go to the produce section if my phone would not freeze. All right. Now, the produce section, at least what they're advertising, isn't the greatest. You got a 99-cent head of lettuce. Mm. Yeah.
Like, I haven't. So as kids, my parents always bought a head of iceberg lettuce because that's what we used in sandwiches. It provides a good crunch, but iceberg lettuce is like the lame, it's like the water chestnut of the leafy world. There's like no nutritional value. It's kind of, it has no flavor. It's just crunch.
Yeah. Which is funny, at least to me, that they would like
highlight
use
it.
Yeah, they would use it to.
Midwestern families love a little crunchy iceberg lettuce in their sandwiches.
And here's one. It's $1.99 a pound for bell peppers. Now, I don't know what that equates to in individual peppers, because at Sprouts they're 2 for $1.
Mm.
So I don't know how much a bell pepper weighs. It might end up being the same. I don't know. I haven't weighed a bell pepper in a while.
We should have done that before we recorded them. This is irresponsible of us.
Oh well. You can get pineapples 2 for $6. I don't know if that's good, but you get a $3 pineapple. Ooh. And it's summer, so you know what that means. You can grill the pineapples on the grill. Pineapple grilling season. And then that's kind of it. I mean, they have this thing where it's like buy five, get $5. So like if you buy five of these like participating items, you get like a dollar off of each one.
Mm,
so you can buy like
crap though.
Yeah, I mean you can get like a Skippy peanut butter, a bag of clementines, maybe some Nature Valley bars, some almond milk, and a DiGiorno pizza. All for a dollar off of each of them. So
that's,
I guess that's
exactly what I was buying in college every week for my groceries.
Yeah, perfect. Oh, and they got a little Packer section. So I guess in preparation for the Packer season.
Are preseason games coming soon?
Yeah, they're coming.
Wow.
So the cantaloupes here are $2.49 each. At Sprouts, they were 3 for $1 this week. 33 wow. cents each. Yeah.
Wow. Well, Omi,
so
if my mom and dad listen to this, my mom will be shattered.
Yeah.
She loves Metro Market. She goes there to buy sushi when my dad's out of town, because I learned as an adult that my dad doesn't like raw fish. It's news to me. Do you have to pee?
Yeah, I'm going to go pee real quick.
All right. Omar's taking a bathroom break. To be continued. All right, so I'm excited for our guest this week. Now, I'm going to give away a little behind-the-scenes magic. Sometimes we record these intros after our guests come in. It's just logistics, but not always. So this week we're recording this after we've already interviewed Willie Hunter, who's our guest. And the reason I wanted to talk about it was because days after we recorded this interview, the Carmichael Show, which he's co-creator of, was announced that it was canceled, which I'm really sad about. I think it was one of the best shows on TV. I think it was really underrated. And, you know, it's this interview I'm really happy about because it was really cool to see genuinely how Willie feels about the success he's gotten from the show. But now I can't help but feel a little sad. I think he has a very promising career ahead of him, but still, I feel a little sad that it got canceled.
Yeah, I mean, especially after hearing him talk about it and just like kind of how much he put into the show and how much it meant to like him and the other guys like Ari and Gerard. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of a bummer to hear that it got canceled. But like you said, I mean, he's a co-creator on a network TV show and a writer. So, you know, hopefully.
Best of luck to you, Willie. Yeah, I'm sure your career is just going to keep skyrocketing. Before we launch into the interview, I want to talk a little bit about the food this week. It's a pretty basic one. We've all had it. Spaghetti.
Spaghetti, and I believe specifically spaghetti and meatballs, correct?
Yeah. I just put spaghetti because we didn't, you know, Willie wasn't too specific on what he wanted. True. And we always ask our guests what their favorite food is, and that's how we pick the topic. For me, if you guys follow me on Instagram, you know that I do a lot of clean eating and healthy eating, and so I've cut out a lot of pasta and, you know, refined floury foods. But I love a good spaghetti squash. If you guys haven't gotten on board with that yet, go to the grocery store, buy a spaghetti squash, cut it in half, put it upside down in a glass pie dish with an inch of water, and microwave it for 10 minutes, and you have basically pasta without the refined flours.
Yeah, or...
Go on.
You can zoodle.
That's right. But zoodling, I don't compare that to, I mean, zoodles are great when you want to incorporate more veggies in your dish and you want some sort of noodle-like thing, but it's not like pasta. A zucchini will never compare to a tasty noodle. If Emily Fedner was here, I'm sure she would agree.
Oh, she'd slap us in the face.
Yeah, she would throw our zoodler in the garbage. Yeah. Do you have some thoughts on spaghetti, Omi?
Yes. Well, I did a little research.
Mm.
As it turns out. So it's funny, I can't remember where I heard it, but I remember hearing that pasta came from like Asia, that Marco Polo brought pasta into like introduce it to Europe and Italy, and that's how it like became all famous. But
Marco Polo. I actually know nothing about him. Isn't there a show about him on TNT?
Yeah, there's also a pool game about him.
He was an explorer?
He was like a trader.
Before or after Christopher Columbus?
Before.
Okay.
He was like, man, I don't know, like the 13th century or something, maybe 12th. I honestly don't know the specifics, but he would travel from Europe all the way across the like Central Asia to get to the East, the Orient, and he would trade and like get to know all these people. And I think he even like sat in on like some Genghis Khan meetings or something, board meetings, and then he would come back with like silks and spices and all this crazy stuff, and he'd be like, hey guys, we got to gentrify this crap. and so then they tried to like, they set up this whole trade route.
Wow. But,
So I'd always heard that Marco Polo introduced pasta from Asia into Europe, but as it turns out, some historians believe that it was the Arabs that introduced pasta to Europe during a conquest of Sicily.
Interesting.
Yeah, in the 9th century, the Arabs, I guess, went into Sicily to gentrify them, and then they introduced pasta. So the Marco Polo story is believed to have originated in the 1920s or 30s, so just like 100 years ago, as an advertisement for a Canadian spaghetti company. Those crazy Canucks. They tricked us. You can never trust a Canadian.
But we love our Canadian listeners.
Well, yeah. If you're in Canada, just please download and rate us. So that's just like pasta in general.
That's so funny. I didn't know that.
And it wasn't until the 18th century that the invention of the first tomato sauces
arrived. It took that long?
Yeah. So the 9th century is when pasta, you know, showed up in Europe and Italy.
So it took them almost 1,000 years?
Yeah. The first written record of pasta with tomato sauce can be found in the 1790 cookbook, I don't know how to pronounce in Italian, La Piccio Moderno B, by Roman chef Francesco Leonardi.
Wow.
Before tomato sauce, people would just eat pasta dry with their fingers.
Ugh! Have you ever eaten, like, a dry spaghetti noodle?
I mean,
it's
just
so
like,
hard to chew. It hurts.
Oh, no, not a dry... No, I mean, I think they would boil it, but just... Yeah. I mean, they would, like, cook it, but...
No sauce,
yeah.
I see.
Which is, yeah, like, if you've ever, you know, when you're cooking pasta and you, like... I mean, I'll taste a noodle to see if it's ready or not. Some people throw it against the wall and see if it sticks. I just, like, eat it. Mm-hmm. And so I just can't imagine eating a whole bowl of just plain
pasta. Sounds terrible.
Yeah. So that's when the sauce came about. And the spaghetti with meatballs, that's all American, baby! New York, baby! New York state of mind! It is believed to be an innovation of early 20th century Italian immigrants in New York City, baby!
Don't do that anymore.
They published a recipe for it in the 1920s.
Really? It took that long?
Spaghetti and meatballs is an American, and a lot of Italian, like, I don't know, writers and chefs are like, this is not true Italian cooking. There is no meatballs in Italian cooking.
Wow. That's so interesting. I didn't know that. I thought that was like one of the oldest dishes because it is such a staple here.
I know, but no.
It's more of an American thing.
Yep.
When I think of spaghetti and meatballs, I always think about like childhood when I was in sports and there was always like a spaghetti dinner to like raise money for the stupid basketball team or like the night before a big swim meet, we'd all have a spaghetti dinner, which I still don't understand why it makes people think you need to load up on spaghetti like 24 hours before you have to do something that is like physically exhausting.
Carbo load.
But that sounds like a terrible idea. Have you ever eaten a whole bowl of pasta or a whole pizza and been like, all right, I'm ready to do something very physically demanding?
No, it's the opposite. But a day later.
A day later, you're hungry again. This makes no sense to me. Do you understand it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's actually, I don't think there's any science behind it. Like people, the theory is that you carboload, so you load up on all these carbohydrates. So now your body just has, carbohydrates, of course, are like your energy source. So now you just have all this energy. It's like topping off your car with gasoline before you go on a road trip, except it takes like a day for the gas to be ready. So you got to eat all this spaghetti or whatever, pasta and Italian food the day before. And then the next day you have a full tank of gas to go out and run a marathon or whatever. But I think I've read articles that say that that's not really how it works.
Yeah. It sounds like a terrible idea.
Yeah. You can just eat regular and then just still have a full tank of gas to go do whatever.
And that is why I was never an athlete. I was just eating pasta and then never burning it off. Time to talk to Willie. You ready?
Yep.
Let's do this. All right. Today's guest is a stand-up comedian, writer, and co-creator of The Carmichael Show, the NBC sitcom that dares to touch on some of today's most heated topics and yet still leaves you laughing and thinking. You can tune into season 3 airing now on NBC on Wednesdays at 9 p.m. He also has the most delightful smile in his headshot, and his favorite food is spaghetti. Welcome, Willie Hunter. Hi, Willie. Thanks so much for coming in and joining us. I know it's so hot out, and everybody just wants to, like, hide in the AC.
Yeah, extremely. I don't know what the temperature is, but when you walk outside, it's like Satan is just breathing on you.
So tell me what you've been up to. You've had a really busy past couple years, but this weekend you were especially busy. Tell us about that.
I was working on the BET Awards. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with that. It's a huge award show. People say it's the Black Oscars, and it really was. Like, every popular musician was Bruno Mars. He walked past me backstage.
How tiny is he?
He's very tiny.
You've got to just put him in in your pocket, don't you?
And, it was so weird because he had a whole crew of people with him and the security.
No one can be taller than him.
So whoever his main security guard person was way taller than him. So he had his arms on his shoulders, but he looked like a little kid that was about to climb on his back. He was so short. He was out there. And then there was a bunch of young rappers. I don't know anything about Migos, Post Malone. I don't know. I didn't know any of these. And that's when I realized I'm old.
Migos? I thought you were saying, like, the taco. Omigas? Yes. That's a Mexican food. That's where my brain went. Is Migos a rapper?
They're like a rap trio. There's like,
they do like trap, right?
Yeah, trap music. Yeah. Well, what are you talking about, Omar? You know your trap music.
Omar has to stay hip because he has a 16-year-old niece who he wants her to forever think he's cool.
So recently I went out to Palm Springs for Coachella just to like drive to like work. Yeah. And I was assigned Lil Yachty. You know who that is?
I know who that is.
Yeah, yes. I didn't know. And that's why I text my niece. I'm like, hey, who's this Lil Yachty? She's like, oh, he's this guy. He's rap. I was like, oh, cool. I'm driving him. She's like, shut up. Are you serious? I was like, yeah. She's like, can you sneak a selfie or a picture with him? I was like, nah, I probably can. Yeah. He'll get mad at me. But yeah, I didn't know who he was.
The red beads. Red beads on too. Yeah. That's him.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy. I mean, nice guy.
You met him too?
I met him too. He's 19 years old.
What?
Yeah.
Doesn't that just make you, like, really reassess your life? Whenever I hear about a celebrity who's hit it big and they're, like, 17, A, I get mad that my mom wasn't a stage mom. And B, I think, like, when I was 17, all I was thinking about was, like, where can I get beer? I wasn't thinking about how to elevate my career. I could be so successful right now if I had my shit together at a young age.
I was just excited to get out of school. I was like, high school, it's over. Yes, let's party. We're adults now. And they're like, no, you're not. You're not an adult.
So that's actually a perfect transition because I want to talk about your early days in comedy.
Okay.
What inspired you to become a comedian?
It was easy. That's the reason why. Like, I remember being in college and I watched a lot of stand-up. And I thought it was funny, but I didn't think it was, like, hard to do. And I've always been a comedian. I was a class clown in my school. So I always thought, boy, it'd be great if I can write comedy. So I started writing scripts on my own when I was 18 or something like that. Like, terrible scripts. They'll never see the light of day. So I would write all those scripts. And then when I finally had about a couple, I said, all right, let's go to Los Angeles and try to sell this. Because you think it's so simple, you know? One of my friend's grandmother told me, said, why don't you just go down to CBS and say, hey, I got this script. And like, yeah, that's how it works. You just walk in on the lot and say, I have a script. Please, let's make it. But that's what I did. And then stand-up.
So much confidence in that.
So much confidence. But then I did stand-up one time, and it went well. And then I did it again, and it went horrible. And I said, well, if I'm going to do this, I need to take it serious. And then I moved to Los Angeles. Only went up twice, and I had these two scripts I wanted to sell that obviously I didn't sell, but the confidence of it, I look back at it, and I was really confident.
Yeah.
I wouldn't take no for an answer. I was very determined to, like, if I had an idea, I'm like, oh, it's going to work. My friends are like, what are you, crazy? You think you're special or something? Now, I saw one of my friends recently. He had a bachelor party, and it's been, you know, almost 10 years now since I've been in Los Angeles, and they're all telling me how proud are they of me, and how much they believed in me. And I'm like, nah, did you really believe in me? Because I don't believe you did when I first decided when I told you I was going to move to Los Angeles. But
were they like trying to throw shade? Like, hey, how much you sell those scripts for, Willie?
Oh, yeah. Everything. Every time. Like, a year went by and then a couple years went by and then 5 years went by. And they're like, oh, you were pretty serious about that. I was like, yes, I was pretty serious about that. I just moved across the country.
Now, you're from Alabama, right?
Yeah.
When you moved, was the people that mattered, your family and close friends, were they supportive? Even though I know you said they were saying they always believed in you.
They were supportive, but they were skeptical like anybody.
Yeah.
I remember, I didn't tell my mom until like a week before I left.
That you were moving?
Yeah, I was moving, yeah.
That's the meanest thing you could do to a mother. Your mother? Oh my God.
Call from LA. Oh, by the way.
Yeah, I'm not in the house anymore. I'm in Los Angeles. Because I knew that she would try to talk me out of it. That's the reason why I waited so late. I had planned on it for months. And then finally, like a week before, I took the Greyhound bus across town, you know.
It was like a 7-day trip.
It was really like 2.5 days. And we went through El Paso, Texas. We went through the long way, you know. I remember telling my mom a week before, and she goes, "What?" I was like, "Yep." And the tickets are non-refundable, so I got it one way too. So I really like made it to where she couldn't tell me not I couldn't go or anything. Yeah. But after a while, and she always said she always trusted me. I never had a curfew or anything growing up. My mom said she always trusted me. So she wasn't too happy about it, and then she got over it, and now she's really happy about it. Because she gets to brag. That's why.
So when people, like when you moved out here, like you said you were a class clown, were people like surprised, like, "Oh, I never saw you as a comedian." Or did they get it?
That's
like,
what Omar gets.
Yeah. I get that a lot. Because they're always like, "You're so quiet." I'm like, "Ah."
I'm quiet too, but I was always funny and open around my close friends.
Yeah, yeah, that's
like my close friends and my family knew that I was funny, but if I didn't know you, I was quiet and I kept to myself.
Like,
and people
extended
like
extended family,
yeah, and they're like, "You? I didn't see that coming." Yeah, I've heard some people say that before. Yeah, definitely. But then the people that know me know that I've always been kind of a goofball.
Yeah.
Tell me about who are some of the first comedians or actors that inspired you to really consider comedy something you could pursue?
The first person was Conan O'Brien. He was I loved Conan O'Brien. Even as a little kid, I thought when he had his opening credits to his show, it was a cartoon. And I always thought, "Oh, it's a cartoon coming on at 11:30 at night." I was like 6 years old. I'm like, "I got to watch this." And here comes this tall, lanky guy, red hair flopping around. I was like, "Well, this isn't a cartoon, but I guess it'll do." And I was watching it since like 1993. It was like he was a year on air. So I always loved his style of humor. It was very sarcastic, very absurd type of humor. So I've always liked him, David Letterman. Of course, Dave Chappelle was a big influence on me, Chappelle's Show. Yeah. And Steve Martin. I watch a lot of Steve Martin on the internet, on YouTube, where he's been a guest on television. And he always comes prepared. He always has a new bit every time. And, of course, his book was the first book I ever read, Born Standing Up.
Oh, yeah, it's a great book.
Anyone that wants to start comedy, I always tell them to read that book. Yeah, that book is amazing. And that, when you first do comedy the first couple of years, it's pretty rough, you know. That book actually helped me feel better about myself and continue doing it. So those were definitely my influences growing up.
Of all the people that you just listed, have you met any of them?
Chappelle is the only one.
And what was that like? Tell me about your first time meeting him.
It was cool. It was cool because we met him at the Improv, the Hollywood Improv. We were following him around when he was performing a lot in Los Angeles.
Who are we with?
Me, Jamar, Neighbors, Angelo Bowers, Gerard Carmichael, Josh Adam Myers.
So back in the day,
yeah. All of us were running around. We were running around trying to watch Chappelle perform. And one night he was just hanging out with us, and he goes, "Man, I'm kind of hungry. Let's go get something to eat." We're like, "Oh, we're going to eat with Chappelle. This is great." So we go to Norm's. All of us go to Norm's.
Perfect.
And we're sitting there. We're ordering food. And as we're ordering food, he casually mentions, he goes, "Oh, yeah, by the way, we're all going Dutch on this." We're like, "Ah, funny, funny, funny." Check comes, and he doesn't pay for it at all.
Wait, he didn't even pay for his share?
He didn't eat anything. He didn't eat anything. But we all thought that he would pay.
That Chappelle Show money would have.
Yeah,
shown,
that
but
would.
It didn't.
And but it didn't at all. So we all had to split a bill with Dave Chappelle.
Maybe the next one, you know.
Next one's on him
first, and then
maybe that's what it was. Yeah. There was no next one, bud. I like to assume that if we hung out again, he would have.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about the Carmichael Show a bit. It's in its third season. It's really been getting a lot of attention as like a must-watch show. It's definitely unlike any other sitcom out there. Because you guys have been on the air a little while now, are there any famous people or people you've admired who have like vocalized that they're a fan of the show that's kind of left you a little starstruck that they pay attention to your work?
It's mostly among fellow comics, not like celebrities or anything. I'm always shocked when someone says, another comic says they like something of yours, because comics don't do that.
Or if they do, you don't believe them?
You don't believe them. You make it, you like, are you really being honest with yourself? But after a couple do that, it makes, like, this one comic says they have viewing parties of Carmichael's Show. Like, and I was like, what?
Who is it? Who has these viewing parties?
God, who was it?
Out them.
It's definitely on the east side. It's part of the alt team. The alt comics love the show, which is crazy. They're like, "Yeah, we all get together, we have viewing parties." And I was like, why? You know, that doesn't make any sense. You know, you just come.
It's ironic to them.
Yeah.
Maybe stop. That's why. All of you need to tune in. Yeah. So the ratings go up.
Why are you watching this? We don't need the numbers. No, we need the numbers.
So you're co-creator of the show. Walk us through the conception of the Carmichael Show.
Well, first, we just wanted to have a show that was dialogue-driven. I knew
and
that.
And who's we?
Gerard Carmichael really wanted that. He said, you know, I don't really care about, we don't want these grand storylines. At first, we wanted something similar to Seinfeld as far as the dialogue, but not as far as them moving from different places all the time. Because they do a lot of scenes in one episode of Seinfeld. Yeah. We wanted to kind of like sit like all in a family, like, this entire act will take place in the living room.
Yeah.
And people kind of go, what's happening? It's like, what's happening is the dialogue. Hopefully we're saying something worth watching.
Right.
And we always wanted to do something like that, Gerard and I. And then he brought in Ari Kachur, who's also another co-creator. And all three of us got together and tried to come up with a concept. And Nick Stoller came in at the last second to give us that celebrity name to it that really made us be able to sell the show, because at the time he had just finished Neighbors and Neighbors 2, and he also did Get Him to the Greek. He did one of the Muppets movie, and he's like a protege of Judd Apatow, so him working with us helped us out tremendously. It made us get over, we were like so close, but we almost fell to the wayside, and then when he attached his name to it, people wanted to buy, you know, so we're very fortunate about that. So thank you, Nick Stoller.
And the show is based on Gerard's life.
Loosely based.
Loosely. You didn't grow up with him, though. So how...
Well, the topics we choose, we try to make them universal.
Yeah.
So whenever we're in the writer's room, and for an example, we had an episode about depression, the episode that I wrote season 2. And the stuff we talked about in the writer's room, there's 12 of us in the writer's room. And whenever we bring up a subject, we all personalize it by telling some story about us, some childhood story. So it becomes like this group therapy thing when we're in there writing each episode, and it's fun. So people are telling dark secrets that they probably never told anyone, let alone, you know, their spouse or their sister or something. That's like one writer said that he remembered his father forcing peanut butter on him. That's why he doesn't like peanut butter to this day.
God.
Because he just didn't like it, and his dad held him down and said, you're going to eat this peanut butter. Put a spoonful of peanut butter in his mouth. And we never used that in the episode or anything, but it was good to know.
I'd love it if this dad was just like a huge George Washington Carver fan. Like, he worked hard for this.
You will appreciate this invention. Oh, man.
I don't know who that is.
He's the guy who invented peanut butter.
Oh.
He invented like... I thought he was uses for the peanut.
His name's George Washington Carver?
Yeah.
What a name. I was hoping it was...
He was
I mean,
named
I
after
love
George Washington.
Okay.
Is he
I expected,
from Alabama,
like,
too, or Mississippi?
Like somewhere in the South, yeah. Somewhere. Well, regardless, this is not a history lesson right now.
We're talking about spaghetti here, guys. Yes.
Okay, so I want to go back to the Carmichael. You guys created this concept, and tell me what it was like pitching it and selling it. I mean, that sounds so terrifying, and I doubt you guys just walked onto the CBS lot and said, we have a script.
That's
what
Willie does.
That's what we did.
You did?
No. No, it was fun because when we went to all these pitch meetings, I think I was 25 at the time, so maybe Gerard was 24 at the time. So when we went to pitch the show to all these people, all these production companies, we were a bunch of kids, and we didn't know anything we were doing. So we would go in riffing the whole time. We would just do our act, joke around to where at the end of the meeting, we didn't even talk about the show because we had no idea what the show was. We just knew that we wanted dialogue. And we'd leave the meetings, and people would go, I don't know what they have, but I want to work with them. Because we were young and we were hungry. That worked in our favor. And Gerard, of course, is a very charming guy. One time we had our biggest pitch meeting was to the NBC executives. We had a time slot at like 2:30. Gerard shows up late. You know, we only have a 30-minute.
Charmed his way through.
We're sitting there waiting there. You know, Ari and I and Nick, or maybe in someone else at a different time. Then we're all sitting there waiting. We're like, oh, we got 15 minutes left. This is my opportunity. Anything's gonna just die away. And he pokes his head in there. And the first thing he says, he goes, "Who knew LeBron James couldn't act?" And we all go, "What?" He's like, "I'm sorry, I was late doing a commercial with LeBron, so let's get to it." And he jumped right into it. And I was like, "Who is this person?"
Oh my God.
I'd have been freaking out. I'd have been you know, apologizing profusely the whole time, saying, I'm so sorry, can we reschedule? I don't know. But he just came in and didn't miss a beat, and it was fun. I love the process of pitching the show, just running around and talking to people.
Do you remember where you were when you got the news that you sold the pilot and then they picked it up for a series?
I was at my apartment. It was on August 30th, 2012. Yeah. Wow. August 30th, 2012. It was one day before my birthday, because my birthday is August 31st. And I used to have this thing where I used to say that if I haven't completed or done something by 25, then I may just pack it up and call it. And this was the last day of my 25th birthday.
Whoa.
So I remember.
Cut it close.
Yeah, I almost quit everything. No.
You're like about to click the Greyhound ticket.
Yeah, I'm going back. Yeah.
One way, purchase.
They're like, we sold a show. I'm like, well, I guess I'll stay for a little bit now. But I'll never forget that day. And it was also the day before I went camping with my friends and we did mushrooms. So I'll
celebratory mushrooms.
That's what it became. But yeah. So I'll never forget that day ever in my entire life.
I imagine that mushroom trip maybe helped you inspire some, I don't know, jokes for the upcoming season.
No, it made me uptight because I remember we were at some campsite, and I thought we were going to go camping, like go out into the, I've never gone camping really before, and it was just at a campsite, so we had like a family of three beside us, and then there was like another family beside us, and I was like, I thought we were going to be alone because we're going to do mushrooms and scream and yell and stuff. So eventually the rangers, the park rangers, came over and had to calm us down to the point where they said that you guys don't shape up, we're going to have to call the cops and you're going to get arrested.
Oh, my
and
God.
So my mushroom trip was like, oh, Willie, you're better than this. You just sold a TV show. You're a grown-up now. You can't be doing this anymore.
Can't be out here messing with these mushrooms.
Yeah, you can be messing with these mushrooms. And you can throw your life away over a fun little trip. So I remember I panicked. I panicked and I ran away from campsite, ran back home.
Oh, my God.
I just hitched a taxi cab somehow. This is before Uber. I don't know how this happened.
How expensive was this taxi?
$108.
Oh, my God.
All the way from Malibu State Park, I believe that's where it was at, to West Hollywood. So,
and then
Matt Egger, my friend, who was also there. You know Matt,
yeah.
I remember I was on the phone and he was like, where are you? I said, I don't know. I'm at a McDonald's right now. I'm going home. I can't do this. I'm better than this, Matt. I'm better than this. This is where we're going to have to go our separate ways here. And then I saw Matt the next day and he goes like, what do you mean we had to go separate ways? You mean you don't want to be friends anymore? I was like, no, I had to leave the park.
Literally.
Yeah. What are you talking about? He thought I was breaking up with him.
So I want to know, I'm sure there's a million ways to answer this, but what is your favorite thing about working on the Carmichael Show? It's your baby, so.
My favorite thing is, oddly enough, was being in the writer's room, going there every day. I never thought of myself as a routine person, but I actually like it. You know, I'd get up every day at 8 o'clock, shower, go to work. My favorite thing about when we start the writer's room, and I'm sure every room's different, but from the ones I've been in, the different ones I've been in, they're all kind of the same. The first order of business is lunch. That's the first thing you do.
Yeah.
Before you start anything, you
everybody puts in their lunch order, right?
We got to order lunch. Mm-hmm. And then lunch shows up an hour later, and you're like, we didn't really do anything. They're like, all right, lunch break, but we only worked for an hour. But okay, I love being in the writer's room, and we're all talking life stuff, and we're all riffing, and we're all coming up with different ways to create a story, and I really liked that a lot, and it really was the hardest part of the show, but it was the most fun I had, was being in the writer's room with everyone just riffing and trying to come up with stories and stuff. That was my favorite part.
Now, outside of working on one of the best shows on TV right now, you also have a stand-up career.
Yeah.
And early on, you worked as a door guy at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
So that's a job that I feel like a lot of people outside of Los Angeles don't know is a thing.
For those who can't see, Willie said, yeah, oof, when reminiscing about the door guy job, and then immediately reached for his beer and took a swing.
This is
the heavy-hitting part of the podcast.
Yeah, it is.
So, on paper, you know, this job sounds terrible.
Oh, it is terrible.
Stand at a door.
Stand at a door.
And you're like a bouncer
without
like the suit jacket,
jacket, and also without the physical strength. You guys can't see me, but I'm very thin. I should not be bouncing anyone, but that's what you did. And I remember one time I had to bounce 70 people out. I mean, really? I didn't physically do it. The comedian on stage said, I'm not telling another joke until you guys leave. And they're like, whatever. So he waited 20 minutes on stage as everyone walked out.
Oh, my God.
And the comedian after him said, I'm not performing either until you guys leave. So, and then the crowd, you let the crowd turn on the crowd. And then they're like, get out of here. We paid money for this. If you got, you know. And then finally they all got up and left. But I'll never forget that night. I'm like, you want me to kick out 70 people? I can't even kick out 70 animals, you know. Like, not along people. I can't do this. But the door guy job was the worst. You get paid the least amount of money they legally allowed to pay you. Me and the other doorman kind of said, all right, that's what we're going to do. Well, we're going to drink all your alcohol. So every night that I worked there for the 2 years I worked there, I was probably drunk at the end of the night. There's no doubt about it because it was just a horrible job. But the reason why we worked the job was because we were comedians and we got to perform there. So it wasn't necessarily the money or, you know, the tips or anything. It was just that long as I got to perform there. So you were kind of working there to perform there. That shows you how much I look back when I was younger and I go, boy, I had a lot of dedication to something that may or may not have worked out. You know, I look back at those times. Could I do that again now? No way. No way. No way I could do that. But then it was just part of the process. When I started working there, it was a mean club. It was really mean. It was not as nice as it... When I started working there in Brenton Biddlecombe...
Like, the audiences were mean?
No, the people that worked there, the employees were mean.
Yikes.
That's why you never had any audiences there. They would sometimes it would... Potluck, you remember those times? It would be 12 people there.
At most.
And you would pray for that.
Good night.
Yeah, now there's like 80 people in there. And I'm like, what happened? I think the atmosphere of the Comedy Store, of the employees, changed the atmosphere of the club. Like, when Brenton started working there and I started working there, Jesus started working there, you know, they started bringing in some nicer people to where that we would actually be nice to other comics that were not comics there regularly. I always hated hazing and stuff like that, and there was a lot of hazing going on.
Territorial.
Yeah, it was like
come
this.
Here enough.
You know, come here enough. You got to hang out. Like, what does that mean? I got to hang out.
It's the worst kind of fraternity because in like a real fraternity, you hang out for 3 months and then you join.
Yeah.
But this one, you hang out for 10 years and they maybe let you in.
Maybe. Yeah.
At best, they will, but most likely, no.
Yeah.
No matter how talented you are, most likely no.
I mean, Omar knows it. You're on Friends and Family, and how long have you been on Friends and Family now?
Let me drink your beer. I've been calling in for like 6 years now.
That's crazy.
And this isn't even just to shit on that club. I think it's more, this ties into the idea of being a comedian is such a gamble.
Yeah.
It's not like you go to college for a business degree and then you get a job at an insurance company and you're set. It's like, this career is very hit or miss. And I think a lot of people don't understand that who don't live in Hollywood or have anything to do with the entertainment industry. Most of the entertainment they're consuming is probably unpaid services or poorly paid services.
I think the turnover rate of people who start comedy and finishes, when I say finish, I mean stays with it, is not that high. I think a lot of people try comedy, and then after a year or two passes by, and they didn't become the superstar that they thought they were going to be, they quit. I've known a lot of comedians that quit after a year or two. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've had some friends that come and go.
Yeah.
And then they show back up 3 years later, like, I'm here to pick up where I left off. Like, it doesn't work that way. You got to, like, stay with it the whole time.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about food now.
Okay.
So when I asked you if you wanted to come on here, like I do with all of our guests, I say, what is your favorite food? You said spaghetti.
Yeah, I love spaghetti.
Why? I feel like that's such a simple
thing
that nobody says. Yeah, it's overlooked.
But spaghetti's good.
It's a solid go-to. It's quick. It's very youthful, too, at the same time. Like, it just brings back a lot of childhood memories. My mom used to cook every night. And she worked a job, too, which is insane. She'd get off work, and she'd cook us dinner. Mm-hmm. And she did that for about, 12 years or so. And I remember whenever she cooked spaghetti, I got excited about it. So it brings back a lot of youthful jubilation. And it's just a good go-to. I love Italian food. That's my favorite. I don't know, genre or favorite type of food is Italian food. It's heavy, you know, there's sauce involved, there's meat in there. You know, of course you throw a salad there because you gotta eat healthy or whatever.
It's like the obligatory salad, but yeah. Nobody really, you like have two bites, but yeah. You so, care more about the spaghetti.
Yeah. Is your spaghetti, is it meat sauce or is it sauce? Oh,
meat sauce. Meat sauce. I like it with the meat sauce. The meatballs, it becomes like a two-meal thing. Yeah. You know, I like it all mixed in together. I had this, my one friend, we used to have these potluck dinners, and his dad used to just grab a plate and throw all the food on top of each other. Like, and I remember asking him, I was like, why don't you separate the food? He goes, it's all going to the same place. So that's why I look at spaghetti. So you throw the meat sauce in there, it's all going to the same place. I don't need to, you know... That is my favorite thing to do. I think my girlfriend and I think that was the first meal too that we actually cooked together. It was something simple like spaghetti.
Yeah.
So it always has a lot of fond. I have fond memories of spaghetti.
Do you know if your mom had like a spaghetti recipe or anything special that she did?
I don't think she did.
You should find out.
I should find out.
And if so, we'll share it.
Yeah.
If she's willing to share, we'll share it on our website.
Why do people
if
hold
Mama
on to
Mama Hunter
it?
Is willing to share.
I don't think she... I think it was just basically like, you know, pasta and like ragu or something like that. Or something like that.
I love ragu.
Yeah, it was something like that. I think that's what it was.
So, do you cook? Do you like to cook for yourself?
I don't mind it. It's just that the cleanup. I mean, that's the only reason why... I don't cook as the cleanup. I had the, what do you call it? The Blue Apron. I did that for about 3 months, and it was all right. The food was actually a little more complicated than I thought it would be. There's a lot of prep involved, and I don't like prep. I don't like prep, and I don't like cleaning dishes, so I don't cook that often. But I'm good at following instructions. If someone gave me, like, a recipe and I followed it, I can cook that way. There's no doubt about it. I don't have any recipes or anything off the top of my head, though. I can fry an egg. I'm pretty good at frying an egg.
That's a good skill to have, though. Yeah. Omar and I always like to say, put an egg on it. Like, if there's leftovers, just fry an egg put an egg on it.
Yes.
Call it a meal.
Absolutely.
What is your most memorable meal, if you have one?
Most memorable meal. And it sucks to even admit this, but... It is, I think this is what's American about all of us. It has to be something fast food, probably, which is just so sad to say. Like McDonald's or something. And like, there's always pleasant memories when it comes to McDonald's, all the way up to an adult. Like, as a kid, you got the Happy Meal, you get to play in the ball pit.
Yeah.
As an adult, I actually like the taste of the Big Mac, you know. As a kid, like, oh, what is this crazy sauce? But as an adult, like, yeah, I like it. And I don't even like mayo, but I know that that sauce is Thousand Island or some mayo mix or something. His favorite meal is probably McDonald's. That's so, I hate to admit it, but it is.
I mean, I had a birthday party there when I was a kid. I think everybody, like, here in America loved McDonald's growing up. And now you have to, like, tell yourself you hate it. Because here's the thing, I'll eat it and then I feel like crap afterwards.
Oh yeah.
But I secretly enjoyed every moment of it.
Oh, yeah.
As somebody who Instagrams solely about eating all of your vegetables, I secretly love McDonald's.
Someone made the mistake of telling me about the McDonald's app and how they have free food every now and then.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a great app.
Like, oh, I shouldn't have told you.
A lot of free stuff.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be...
Whenever the Dodgers, like, here, whenever, like, the Dodgers win or, like, have, like, a shutout in the sixth inning, you get, like, free nuggets. Or, like, if the Angels win, you get, like, a free burger. And it's
the thing that my girl and I do, especially if we're at the end of the night after performing or whatever, and if it's before 2 a.m., she would always offer, but I know that that's what she wants. She was like, she goes, should we go to Taco Bell? And I was like, you know we're going to go to Taco Bell.
Do you and Rebecca have a place?
Not yet.
A place to eat?
Not yet. No. Not yet. We've tried a bunch of places, and without her, I would not go. I don't go out and eat that often at a restaurant, sit down and stuff. I Postmates stuff. So we go out, and we've been to a couple places near where we live. There was this Argentinian place off Melrose close to the Improv that we went to that was... I wish I was sick that day. I wish I could have... I felt so bad because I told her about this place, and I ate there before. It was all date night, and then as we got closer, I started getting like a stomach virus thing, so I couldn't even eat.
Oh.
So we had to go back home, and I told her I apologized to her and everything, but we haven't found the place yet.
Okay, this is a question that I ask all of our guests at the end of chatting with them.
Okay.
What is your secret sauce, whether that's in cooking or eating or in your career or in life? However you want to answer that is totally fine.
Oh, man, that's such a loaded question there. it's so deep. It's so rich. You can go either way with this question. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to go philosophical here. This is going back to the first time I did mushrooms, too. Look at this. We're good. Is that I remember when I was freaking out, I just had a mantra to myself that I kept saying was, everything's going to be all right. Everything's going to be all right. I kept saying that no matter how tough a situation feels or how impossible something seems, I always kept saying to myself, everything's going to be all right. A lot of people say that I'm lucky. I have like a good luck or an angel over me because I have been very lucky about everything in life. And I always tell them that I always say, oh, everything's going to be all right. And I lived in this apartment complex once and my neighbor's apartment caught on fire. It was a big fire too. And we were next door neighbors. And I was I went out of place for a while, and then our apartment complex was going to charge me rent for the month. And I said, there's no way I'm paying rent. The apartment was on fire. It was unlivable. You want me to pay for rent for that month? I'm not going to do that. And I remember I had to go through like these three other different people. Mm. And I'm, at that time in my life, and I was just really pissed. I was outside screaming into the air. Like a crazy homeless person, just screaming. Yeah, because I guess I was homeless.
You were a homeless person.
Yeah, so I was crazy then. So I was just, and then it hit me that, oh, everything's going to be all right. They ended up not charging us for the month rent. And because of that, we got new flooring in our apartment. They had to repaint it.
Wow.
So it all, the worst possible situation got us new hardwood floors.
Yeah, it all worked out.
And so every time I find myself in an impossible situation, or feeling very in a difficult situation, I always just say to myself, everything is going to be all right. So if I had any secret sauce, it would be to tell yourself everything is going to be all right.
Great answer. Okay, last segment. I want to play a little game.
Okay.
So I'm going to list a topic, and then you say either al dente or overdone. Okay. So al dente is like you like it, you approve, and overdone is like you hate it. Not a fan.
Okay.
Improv.
Ooh. Overdone. Yeah. It's just the atmosphere of improv. I like my comedy dark and gritty and like almost like a one man show. And improv is too campground and yes and. Like, no, no.
No and.
No and. How about no sometimes?
Putting an egg on it.
Al dente. I like that a lot. I remember the first time I had an egg on a burger, and it changed my life. I was like, what? You can do that?
Yeah.
And I think maybe Fatburger does that or some place like that. Yeah.
Social media.
I think it depends on my mood.
Yeah. You're not alone.
Because I get it, but then most of the time it's overdone. It's definitely overdone most of the time.
Paying for classes to teach you comedy. Those exist, by the way.
I know. Overdone. I think if you're going to get into comedy, you just got to throw yourself in there. You just got to do it. You'll learn faster that way. And it's your own voice. So don't you think you should find your own voice on your own? Not have someone try to tell you how to think and how to write?
Yeah.
So I think comedy classes are overdone. But there are some people that I heard that took comedy, like Sebastian Maniscalco took a comedy class. Yeah. So if... I guess the people that don't know what they're getting themselves into, and maybe as a starter or something, I can see that. But if you're taking it like six times or something like that, it's completely overdone.
Yeah.
Summertime in Los Angeles, mainly the heat.
Going back to, I complain a lot because I'm a complainer, but it's al dente. It really is. Because unless you spend a summer in Alabama,
Humidity,
the sweat's just sticking to you, and this is what I noticed too was that it could be 99 degrees during the day, and at night it's 91.
Mm.
So the temperature doesn't drop like Los Angeles. At least at nighttime, the temperature dropped to the low 70s, even if it's like 89 or hot like it is today. I know tonight it'll be fine, but I think it's al dente. I can't complain about the weather here too much.
Spaghetti squash as a noodle substitute for spaghetti.
You know what? I had some about a few months ago. Al dente. Wasn't that bad at all. It was a healthy alternative that I was like, I could do.
Yeah.
I'm a huge spaghetti squash fan.
We have
it's so easy. You can just squash. You just cut it in half, you put it in the microwave, and it's done.
Yeah.
And then you have noodles. It's
how do you make the noodle part of it? You just have like a...
You use a fork because that's the insides of the squash. Like somebody make it for you?
Yeah, someone made it for me, yes.
Yeah, it looks like a squash and then you just cut it in half.
Is that simple?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I microwave it face side down in a little bit of water in like a pie dish for 10 minutes. And then the water is like kind of boiling so it gets like juicy up in there. And then when it's done, you just use a fork and scrape it out. And it's just, it is a noodle.
Like as the fibers, and so you just like... Yeah. Scrape the fibers out.
It's
like
nature's noodly. Spaghetti.
I think you just created a dish here that I'm going to be cooking for a very long time.
Yeah.
Like I said, I love things that are simple. I like spaghetti. It's very simple. Yeah. And I remember that one scene in Mystic Pizza when I threw the spaghetti against the wall. That's how you tell if it's done or not. And if it sticks, it's good to go, right?
Yeah. Last one, reality TV.
I don't know what to think about it. TV in general is not the same anymore because it is all reality TV. And I watch a lot of reality TV. I like American Idol. And, you know, when it first came out, when it first started, I really liked it. And I hate to admit it, but I watched some Real Housewives of, you know, Atlanta. So if you like reality TV, sure. If you don't, I get it. I'm gonna go al dente. Yeah, I'm gonna say, if you like it, you like it.
Love it. Well, Willie, thank you so much for coming on the
Thanks
show.
For having
this
me.
Is so great to talk to you. I feel like I learned so much about you.
Oh,
and so much about the comedy world and just, you know, the determination, the gumption it takes to make a career. It seems like it's a never ending process, and it's all about mindset.
Yeah, it is, and. There's anyone who wants to start comedy that is listening, I always tell everyone, I'm not a guy that says don't do it. I always encourage people to do it, and if you really like it, continue. And if you don't like it, then just quit it. I mean, there's no shame in it at all.
Well, everybody who's listening, tune into The Carmichael Show Wednesdays at 9 on NBC. Willie, where can people find you on social media that you're half and half al dente overdone
about?
Yeah,
I'm half and half. I have a Twitter account at Will Hunter Show, and I'm on Instagram at Willie_Hunter, and my phone number is 323-804. You really didn't want to get my full phone number.
I gave the majority of the numbers there.
You can figure out the last four digits on your own. But remember, it is 323-804. And then, you know, 3 years from now,
you're like, I finally got it. I went through 7,400 combinations. I finally got it.
All right, well, if you want to call Willie, you almost know all the Thank you all so much for listening. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @comedycallpod. We love to hear from you guys. And thanks so much. See you next week. Booty call.
Hold on, I gotta get this.